it's a play on words. Says Dave that Redbird's jersey is peak. Thank you, Ryan, again. I do love my jerseys.
Yeah, that one is nice.
I love weird jerseys.
Is that one new, Dave?
No, I've worn it quite a few times.
Ew.
You just haven't noticed.
I guess I'm just a bad friend.
Yeah. I put it on in the morning. I'm like, you know who's going to love this is Rach. And she's like, oh, is that a new one? No, it's not.
I wore this on your birthday last year. You don't even remember.
Attorney Brad Young joins us. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
Let me give Brad a little introduction. If you listen to the show all the time, you know him. He's on a couple times a week. Does a lot of stuff in 97.1. Brad is one of my reasonable conservative friends. We disagree on Trump a lot, but he is a he calls balls and strikes, and he is a true conservative in like the Amy Mark scores kind of way. And he's really fun to talk to and a great attorney. And so we have him on. We talk about Supreme Court cases and current events. Brad, I have to ask you right out of the chute about what's going on with the reflecting pool. Because as I said in my opener, I don't think it's in the top 50 important stories, but it's certainly in my top 5 interesting stories. And I said something that I haven't said before on my show, but I said on this one, we can set aside people who support Trump. On this issue, no person who is both smart and honest really thinks there's someone in the middle of the night cutting a 350-foot slice down the middle of the reflecting pool. Every honest, smart person knows that the president did what he always does. He tried to fix something that wasn't broke, and he hired some Spider-Man villain to do the work, a convicted felon, and they obviously didn't do the work well enough, and then they made it worse by pouring 12,000 gallons of paint thinner in it. 2 + 2 = 4. Why can't your guy ever take the tiniest loss?
Well, he's not my guy. I've never voted for the guy. But I will tell you that this is classic Trump, and that is he takes something that's innocuous, makes it an issue, and then invites criticism because he handles it so poorly. Listen, if he just would have tried to have the National Park Service beef up what the Obama administration did, because this has been a constant problem with that reflecting pool over the years, nobody would have thought twice about it.
No.
But because, number one, he had to rip out what Obama did, because anything Obama did has to be bad, right? So he ripped it out. And then secondly, he makes an issue out of it. Thirdly, he hires a contributor to his campaign, someone who donated $200,000 to his campaign. Then he gives the job to them and they screw it up. And then he tries to blame these phantom criminals for doing anything. Listen, the people who have been arrested for this, for the so-called vandalism, all they did was is that they reached in and the paint that has already been peeling up and rising to the top of the water, they just reached in to try to pull a little bit of more of that off, probably for a souvenir. They didn't damage anything. The paint had already peeled all the way to the surface of the water. Yeah. So this is classic Trump. Whatever anybody else did was terrible. Whatever he does is fantastic. And when it screws up, then he has to have somebody to blame.
So true. And Brad, look, you know me. I can't stand Trump. But if he hadn't said this stupid thing, if he just said, hey, I'm a construction guy, sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't, the algae's back, we'll do what we can, we're going to repair this, I wouldn't have said anything, honestly, because that's just an honest broker. That's the way things go.
Because most people just don't care that much about the reflecting pool, right? Like, who's really focused on it?
No, that's why I said it's only a story, because he made it a story.
Mm-hmm.
And had he done exactly what you did, what you just said, Dave, this story wouldn't have even had any legs at all. But now we're like into week 2 or 3 of this story only because of the way Trump handles it.
And you know that every reporter out there is just smirking, knowing that they have weeks to keep coming back to and be like, Mr. President, you said you have photos of the person slicing this, and we'll see them when you take them to court. Can we see? You know, it's going to go on forever.
Right. And now we have to divert more resources. I mean, I saw this morning as I'm watching CNN this morning, and now there's like this constant police armed guard presence.
National Guard. Yeah.
Yeah. Around the stupid reflecting pool. Right. And you're saying those National Guard people can't be used somewhere else. It's something better than guarding a worthless body of water that's only an issue because you made it an issue. I mean, it's ridiculous on every front. And it's really a great example from a PR standpoint. I mean, Trump does some things PR that's very good, but some things are just as bad as the stuff that he does that's good from a PR perspective. And this is a classic example of that.
You know, the people I really hate, and I hate to use that word, but I'm just an honest person, and I hate, are the, whoever they are, the sycophants who he employs, who are constantly whispering bull S in his ear, and then he runs with it, right? You know, someone said, you know, Mr. Yeah. President, some of these people could have gotten in there with a knife, and he's like, there you go, that's it.
That's
like,
it.
I'm so sick of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have to have a boogeyman. And so in this instance, it's these people who really didn't do anything. There's no evidence of anyone doing any substantive criminal activity.
No.
And like I said, at most, and I can see that. I mean, you know, there's great stories about when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, that people went and grabbed parts of his coat and cut it off because they wanted a souvenir of the assassinated president. I mean, that sounds weird. But I mean, these folks who are pulling this up were wanting a souvenir in all likelihood, but they weren't causing any more damage than what was already there.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to your stories. Mildly blue or a blue tsunami, 9 states will decide if Dems flip control of the U.S. Senate.
Well, yeah, and I think that that's a big issue right now because politically, the Democrats are saying, listen, we want to ride this blue wave to retake the Senate. However, the numbers at this point are really in favor of the Republicans because more of the seats that are up for reelection are in very safe Republican seats. So it's interesting. You know, we can say, look at Trump's approval rating. It's only 30%. But the problem with that is that that's analysis of the country as a whole, not necessarily of the states that are going to be electing senators this year. So really, when you look at it, and I'll be coming out with some very specific predictions probably in August because it's still a little soon. But just looking at the map right now, as I've done for the last couple of days, the Democrats have to have really a very, very strong showing in red, deep red Republican states for them to retake the Senate in November.
Brad, I'm going to take a hard left turn, no pun, but I'm reading more and more about how the younger generations are fascinated by and embracing Mondami-style democratic socialism. I know that's the farthest thing away from what you personally believe, but can you open your mind that 10, 20, 25, 30 years from now, we may be more democratic socialist than we are Democrat or Republican?
Oh, I don't think it takes an opening of my mind. I think that is a trend that at this point is a trend line. Now, keep in mind, trend lines don't always go in a straight linear fashion.
Right.
So, yeah, when you look at right now, the majority of those kids that coming out of school tend to be not even just left, but socialism left. If that trend line continues, yeah, we could have major, major changes in our country structurally. Now, the joke that I did to my kids and that they are also now coming back to me and telling me, yeah, there's some truth to it, is I said, yeah, 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 you're a socialist now, but wait till you start paying taxes, right? And then, it doesn't really change them all that much, but they have come back and said, yeah, Dad, I see what you mean. When the government takes a third out of your paycheck, it makes you start to wonder. And so that may happen here as well with the trend line that's going towards socialism.
Yeah, I mean, I would make a strong case that socialism can't happen here because business interests influence too much of politics, and that's not socialism. There's just too much money in it. As long as there's money in it, good luck. But I would say it's interesting to me,
Brad. Let me stop you there, Kev, because that's a really interesting thought. aren't there more of us than there are them? Or do you think that business interests are always going to be more powerful than the mass?
Who gets a meeting with someone who holds federal office? Not me. I can't just go knock on a door. Elon can. And I don't just mean him. That's one example. Anybody at those levels, anybody that donates a lot of money can just make a call. Anybody that's part of a PAC can just give money. And you can then, hey, gave you a couple million bucks. Got a minute? I mean, our influence is so for sale that I don't think that an actual socialist thing is even possible at this point. But I will say,
let me give you an example though to prove your point, Kevin. Let's look at Google, right? If you look at the structure of Google, the management of Google, it's predominantly Democrats that are running Google.
Right.
But Google is never, ever in any of the known multiverses, they're never going to allow there to be any sort of socialism.
Right.
Because in doing so, you're going to be stripping wealth from all of the millionaires that are in the upper management of Google.
Right.
So I think what you see is you might see, and I can see this more than socialism. If you look down the line 5, 10, 20, 30 years, you might have a populace that moves more to the left because of this socialism trend. But I don't see you moving more towards socialism because of the exact business interest that Kevin outlined.
Right, right, right. So I think that's what's interesting is, could you end up with a version of government that maybe looks more like what you see in some places in Europe? Because a lot of them are not true socialists, right? They have isms, like they have parts of it. You know, Canada's a little bit of everything, as an example. UK is a little bit of everything. It's a little bit more with social programs and national health care and things like that. I think that would be the direction that those people that are leaning further left would push and actually have a chance at getting something done. Full socialism's never happening here. There's just too much power vested in money. But I would say it's interesting, Brad. I'm curious to get your thought is if this is we talk a lot, or at least I bring up a lot, how the winds blow back and forth politically every so many number of years. And for a long time, there was a group of people that kind of got ignored, that kind of got pushed to the side, that weren't a part of the conversation. A lot of those people became big fans of Donald Trump because there were things in there that appealed to them and they felt like they were being ignored. I wonder if this is a similar dynamic from a different group of people.
Oh, sure. And that's what's fascinating about the dynamic aspect of our political system is that it does change over time. And it does have waves like the waves of an ocean where waves come in and change. For a while when Reagan was president, there was waves of conservatism and those things went down.
Right.
And we're seeing a lot of those waves change and ebb and flow. I think my own personal thought is that once people see, like in New York, where this brand of socialism or socialism Democrat, socialism light, when those things fail economically, I think people are going to be less likely to go in that direction and more towards a maybe center left
right.
politics as opposed to true socialism Democrats like we see with Mamdani or even Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Brad, can you hang one more?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a break and come back and talk to Brad a little bit more about this, about a couple more cases. Going to the city. Great music today, Dave. Well, thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. Attorney Brad Young is with us. You guys need to join the chat. Because it's really lively today.
It's popping off today.
And our regulars are debating and arguing about the topics that we're bringing
up. Just keep it civil, gang.
We're not.
It's been so far. No, it's been okay, but.
Yeah, it's been good.
Let's not. If you start getting into insults and name calling and all that, you're probably going to get banned.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
Andrew hasn't banned anyone in a while.
He's itchy.
He's got
that we know of.
He's got the you know what.
I'm real itchy.
Attorney Brad Young is with us. Brad, as you know, being a devout Christian, that you probably don't know another agnostic as interested in religion as I am. Religion itself, the legalities of religion. And I thought this case that came out of the Supreme Court today with the Rastafarians was really interesting.
Well, it is. And here's essentially what happened today. The Supreme Court, it was a 6-3 decision. And the court was ruling on a religious liberty type of case where Mr. Damon Landauer, or Landor, he's a devout Rastafarian, he was in a Louisiana prison, and officials forcibly shaved his head even after he objected on religious grounds, and then he filed a lawsuit against Louisiana. So the question was, you know, can he get money? And this is a great example of how the Supreme Court never wants to decide issues that they don't have to decide. And we've talked about that before, and this is a great case to demonstrate that idea, Dave, because here there's no question his religious liberty was impacted. It was ignored. I mean, they shaved his head. He told them in advance. He gave them documentation. This isn't something he just dreamed up. He's been a practicing Rastafarian his entire life, and these officials in Louisiana still shaved his head. So he sued, and the court on a 6-3 vote, and they wrote the opinion in such a way as to apply what's called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. That doesn't matter. But the point being is that's how you get money for these types of things if you're in prison. And they ruled that even though the act itself says that the government shall protect religious liberty, the officials at the Louisiana prison where he was an inmate, they acknowledged that he had religious liberty. And the prison stated that the guards acted in opposition to the position of the prison. And so the lawsuit was only against the guards themselves. And the court ruled 6-3 that this statute doesn't allow you to sue guards. It only allows you to sue governments. Since the guards were acting in contravention to the prison's position, then they were acting outside the scope and course of their employment. And but they can't be sued because this statute only allows you to sue governments, not individuals.
So, Brad,
boy, you couldn't get any more narrow than that.
To get a little more in the weeds, this sort of like you ordered the what was it called? Few Good Men, the red.
Yeah, the Code Red.
Code Red. You ordered the Code Red, didn't you? Like those guards knew what you wanted them to do.
Yeah, this is exactly like the Code Red situation, 100%, but it's in a civil situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no question. I mean, it wasn't like these guards were doing this on their own. There had to be some sort of community of thought among the guards that, hey, let's stick it to the Rastafarian and shave his head, right?
Hmm.
And so they were acting as prison guards when they did it. They didn't break into his prison cell. They did it as guards, and they did it. So the civil liability, though, was just a question, the bridge too far for some of these justices. And instead of ruling that this guy had a religious liberty right into having his hair long, it wasn't as if the prison said, no, 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 you have to shave your head because of security reasons. In fact, the prison took the opposite position. We recognize your religious liberty. So the guards acted on their own, according to the prison, but because the Supreme Court interpreted the law to say you can't sue individuals under this law, they rejected his request for money.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
On KMOX. I'm going to check in with our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Rick, you better look out. Ed Curtis giving me another lesson tomorrow. Watch
oh,
your back.
Uh-oh. I'm scared a little bit.
You know what? After the way I played last week, he might have meant me give him a lesson. That could be what he was talking
about.
Oh. Yeah.
Dude, yeah, that's
the student becoming the teacher.
So, well, it happens. It happens. Yeah, Mr. Miyagi. So I feel like you've got that potential. And you know what? You can always dream, Dave. That's all that matters. That's the fun. That's the fun of sports, isn't it? Trying to figure out how can I get a little bit better, and who knows how good I can be.
Ricky always has my back.
Yep.
Yeah, I do. I got it.
Ricky has that Christian way of being real essy to you, but it still comes out real nice.
I have both of that in me, by the way.
Well, I know you do.
I've always I've always told people, I said, you might underestimate me a little bit. You might not realize I've got a couple different sides.
Oh, so, you've got a dagger in that.
Yeah.
You got a dagger. You can't have one without when you've been in a clubhouse your whole life. You have to have one.
Yeah, well, so when I was coaching in the minor leagues, I used to tell the pitchers, I said, don't confuse meekness with weakness. Because you're going to see me a certain way, and then I'm going to be all over you, and you're going to go, what happened? And I'm going to go 0-60. And I did that. I mean, I felt bad one day when I did that. I made a young catcher, I made him cry, for goodness sakes, because I was all over him. And it's like, oh, that's probably not the best thing to do. But, you know, I guess I made my point.
Yes, and that is the point, because if that point gets through, that player can get better.
Yeah, and that was my goal, obviously, was to make him better. He's a good kid, and, you know, it's the dilemma of coaching is, you know, you want to be, you know, you want to speak the truth in love, which, again, is the Christian reality of what you do, and so there has to be, I mean, if you're just telling them blah, 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 that's called flattery. That's not, that does nothing to help somebody get better. I mean, flattering somebody is kind of unhelpful. It just is.
Well, Rick, you're a handsome man.
hey, you know what? Actually, that actually made my day, so keep doing that. I don't care.
Rick, what player or coach gave you your worst dressing down of your career?
Oh, my goodness. There's Dave Ricketts is the first one that comes to mind. I had several of them. But Dave Ricketts would get – he'd be the type where he had this, like, really almost sinister face. Now, he's a wonderful guy, and I actually – had the opportunity to speak at his memorial service. His wife asked me to do that with Barbara, and actually spoke at hers too. And I loved those. I loved them dearly. They were wonderful people. But you know, I actually talked about how him dressing me down was very helpful to me and meaningful to me. It's a different era. I don't think you can get away with doing kind of it that way. But he was. Oh my goodness, he was all over me several times that I remember vividly.
Ricky, he got me once, and I never even played pro.
Kevin, all you had to do was be in the same room, and you might get it. So.
First of all, it was like a 1 or 2 day camp, and I was assigned to help him because he's running the catchers, and he was great. I learned so much, but he kind of scared some of the kids. So I was trying to be like a translator and kind of like soften it a little bit, and he got on me. And I was like, well, I guess I'll take it. It was really,
I enjoyed having that. Well, so if you ask Yadier Molina, and you, I think you guys probably know this, but if you ask Yadier Molina, who helped him become the catcher that he was in the big leagues, the first words out of his mouth are going to be Dave Ricketts.
100%.
And I remember Dave Ricketts coming to me in spring training saying, I got a guy you're not going to believe. This is when I first started broadcasting. There's a guy that I'm working with, and he's different than everybody else. He is going to be a superstar, and his name is Yadier Molina.
Very cool.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody with a better reputation for helping develop catchers than Dave Ricketts. And I've asked around all over the league, not just Cardinals people. And even in a day or two, just being there and listening, I can't imagine how much I could learn being around him for a month, let alone just those couple of days.
So here's this one time he dressed me down. It was my first week in spring training as a 23-year-old, didn't even know the guys. We're all signing baseballs. In the clubhouse in St. Petersburg, and I asked Bob Forsch, made that mistake of asking Bob Forsch if we got to keep one of those. He's like, man, I'd love to have an autograph with, you know, Keith Hernandez and all these guys. I mean, all my teammates kind of here in spring training. I didn't make the team, but it's like, can I get one of those balls? So he said, well, all you have to do is go and ask Dave Ricketts. So he was setting me up to go ask Dave. And I said, Dave, do I get one of those baseballs? And about 10 minutes later, he was still yelling at me, saying things like, who do you think you are? You've been here 5 minutes, and you think you're as important as Bruce Sutter and Keith Hernandez? He says, you've only been here 5 minutes. You haven't done anything yet. Why should I give you a baseball? What do you think? These are for you? And oh, my goodness. And I mean, a lot of other things in that I won't repeat. But, you know, after about 10 minutes of that, I said, Dave, I don't want one anymore.
So who set you up again?
Forsch.
Bob Forsch did that. Gotcha. Yeah, no. And not the first time, but certainly not the last.
That's so great.
That's great. Rick, I was at the game last night. It was a Monday crowd, not a Friday night crowd, but good for a Monday. And great vibe. I'm glad to see Arenado get a nice round of applause. Oh. Fun game.
Well, that's what makes sports great. I always look for those moments because that's, you know, I'm in this business of sport, but at the end of the day, if it's only about winning and losing, then I think we're missing something. And, you know, to have Arenado, I looking at his face on a monitor from the booth and looking down at him, I know that it was extremely emotional for him what the crowd did, and it's what's good about sports. A crowd acknowledging somebody's effort and their dedication to their town and to their team, and you know, we know he's on the other team, but we can still love the guy. And I just thought it was great. It really was, and I know it was meaningful to him.
It's really an interesting thing too, Ricky, to kind of just look back at the feeling, the vibe from a year ago. I mean, you know, Nolan, I know he was as frustrated as anybody these last couple of years because his expectations for himself are really high. And maybe sometimes that worked against him, you know, the beating himself up and being really hard on himself, which is a normal thing for athletes. It's just an interesting difference I guess I can't come up with a better word than the vibe of the team and the way they present compared to these last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I think he's a great example of that. And I think he actually tried to say that in post-game sound yesterday. He was basically saying, you know, I'm frustrated. I'm not hitting homers. And then I realized, you know, I think he came to the realization that that kind of brought everybody else down, essentially. And not that he's trying to do that. I mean, but he's made the comment. He looked over at the other side. He goes, boy, that team is having fun. They're jamming. Now, the Cardinals' record is no different than it was a year ago. Think about that.
Right.
Yet, feeling was different. And I think it's partly because the veterans were struggling so badly, and everybody was like, man, when our leaders are struggling, you know, it's kind of hard to go to battle against the other team. And despite, you know, kind of what our record is. So I feel like Nolan was recognizing that, I think, pretty astutely.
It's a hard thing, Rick. I mean, you know, we always ask you kind of the broader questions, and especially the ones that are about like the vibe of a clubhouse. But describe that, you know, because every clubhouse I've ever covered, and I've not been in a big league clubhouse, but I know as a college player, it was all about the upperclassmen. The clubhouse was theirs. They ran it. The kids were not going to run it. And as long as there were older guys, they were going to be in charge. And that's definitely what I've seen in the big leagues. How hard is it? I don't want to say hard. How interesting is it to try to, you know, figure out that vibe? Because when your top guys are all feeling good, it's a great thing to have that. But when they're struggling aging, then it can be a little bit dicey, and not because they want it to be.
Yeah, and it's part of the dynamic of it. That's 100% right, and I don't think it's much different than the senior in college versus the freshman or the senior in high school. I mean, it's the same kind of vibe. It's like, look, we respect you because you've been there, done that, so we're going to acquiesce to you. And who's picking the music in the clubhouse? Who's picking what we wear on the, you know, all that kind of stuff? Who's making decisions for the team? Who's speaking for the team? When the game's over, I mean, everybody's going to go to Arenado. Everybody's going to go to Goldschmidt. Everybody's going to go to Wainwright. That's just kind of what it is, and get sound from them about what happened, or Molina or Pujols. So, you know, the young guys, nobody's going to go to Ryan Fernandez and ask him how the team's doing. I mean, they're just not. So, and you know, just picking out a name. And so you become not subservient, but you just acquiesce to the guys who are older, and if they're struggling, then you're going to feel it.
Can I give some credit and admit I was wrong about something at the same time?
I love the second part of that, but go ahead.
I love everything about the tarps off. I was watching the original game. I almost texted Rick during the game, like, what the hell's going on? And but he told me I can't text during the game anymore. But that's neither here nor there.
It is in the restraining order.
He was within his rights. But, Kev, it might have been you. We were texting that next day, and you're like, how long do you think this is going to go? And I'm like, I don't know, 5-6 games. It'll peter out. And I was wrong, and I'm glad I was wrong. And these young men and women who are doing this, all the credit in the world. They show up every game, and they represent, and they bring an energy that we were sorely lacking. So, way to go.
Yeah, and you're right. I think there was a voice that was thinking, well, maybe this isn't going to catch on, and who knows. You know, I got to say, I was struck by something yesterday, and, you know, everybody always kind of makes the kind of probably improper joke to talk about women being out there, and sometimes there are ladies around just kind of participating and being involved. But yesterday's crowd, for the first time that I saw in the Tarps Off area was very kind of different in terms of racial component. I mean, there was an awful lot of African-American young kids out there and young kids who were white from who knows where. And I just thought that I kind of dug that, too. There was a I think it has a chance to really connect people in a way, young people to the sport, and to each other. And I was really kind of excited to see that yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's and there's a reason why this thing is also happening in other cities. It's not, I mean, it's obviously a big thing here, but it's not just St. Louis, because young fans want to have fun at a ballpark. And sometimes the game is enough fun by itself. Sometimes it's just straightforward. You know, sometimes it's just kind of a slow game.
So we talked about this, but I sat at a soccer game on Saturday at the World Cup game with my daughter and her husband. And after about, I'd say 10 minutes into the game, I felt like I was Ecuadorian. I mean, basically everybody at Arrowhead, I mean, it was 69,000 people. Most were rooting for Ecuador, sat next to a young family from Ecuador, was getting some translation on some of the cheers they were doing. It was an absolute party. You think Tarps Off is fun? I mean, that World Cup soccer environment, I was so thrilled by that. And what you're saying, the score was 0-0.
Right.
For those non-soccer aficionados. But it was anything but boring. It was a great time. I'm so grateful that I had a chance to go to it.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right. Talk soon, guys. Show me the things in
life that I can. The show starts in one.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. We have Neil Gelman coming up at 3. If you're interested in the real estate market in St. Louis, he'll tell you everything about it. 4 p.m., we have the think tank with St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman and Representative Steve Butts. Rach, tell me about the Amazon guy.
Let's see here. Oh, okay. I had a couple Amazon stories, so I wanted to see which one we were talking about. So there's a man, he works as an Amazon delivery driver, but he also has a side gig of doing assignments for students and taking exams for them. And he gets paid to do it. And he earned over $2 million just taking care of assignments and doing exams. I'm assuming he was doing online exams for these kids. And now he's in trouble. And I'm looking at the situation going, hey, at least they're not using AI. They're doing the honorable thing and they're hiring someone to do their work for them and write their papers for them.
Adding to the
like
economy.
Like we did back in the day.
Yeah.
Yes, why is the economy?
I don't want to hear any of those kids ever complaining about jobs.
Why is he in trouble and not the kids? The kids should be in trouble. If you hire, if I hire someone to murder someone, well, that's not a good example. I guess the murderer still gets in trouble.
That's correct.
But that's a crime. Like, doing someone's assignment for them isn't a crime.
I think sitting in on exams is actually a crime.
What?
Now, this person says he wasn't aware that he needed authority from the university, so he didn't, like, realize he was committing a crime. I think he just knew he was doing something shady and bad, but it wasn't actually illegal. But he was charged with fraud because of false representation.
100%. Yeah, don't do that.
3 years I mean, like, imprisonment. Mm.
$2 million? What is he charging these kids?
Well, or how many of them are there?
Yeah, Vic says, why is he driving for Amazon? If the guy can ace all these tests.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. All I know
is... Well, if he has $2 million in his bank account.
Yeah, you know, the... College is really expensive, and it comes with a lot of weight attached to it after the fact. And now you're just making it so that you're less likely to succeed because you're not actually doing any of the work. So whether you're relying on AI or you're paying someone else to do the work for you, you're wasting your money even more, or your parents' money, one way or the other.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's almost like a lot of these kids just go to college because they feel like it's what they're supposed to do, or it's a status symbol thing, or it's just to go and party. And the work itself is just kind of beside the point. I'm going to close the window because someone is yelling and honking. Who knows what they're going to say?
Yeah, they're going to be. I heard a dude going, ah!
Only at KMOX do you have the St. Louis ambiance.
The sounds of the city.
You hear it as we hear it.
But, like, so if a student's caught doing that, they get expelled, right?
I would think so.
Like, to me, that would be automatic.
Yeah.
If you're clearly, if you're paying someone else to do your work, you're done here. You don't get to be here anymore. And you can explain to your parents why you're not going to graduate and let them deal with you.
Vic says, Kevin reminds me, is the guy who would remind the teachers forgot to give homework.
Oh, never, never. You just keep quiet. No, we had that person in our class in grade school. That was Monica. Not cool.
Monica sucks.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. Monica catching strays.
At the end of the day, listen.
Good thing we closed the window. Monica could be
out there. You get to the end of the day at least once a week, and we're about ready to leave, and nobody has said anything about homework, and she'll be like, raise her hand. Ah, do we have any homework? We're like, no!
Didn't you go to a boys' school?
High school. This was grade school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We almost caught him in another lie.
Yeah.
I was about to get him.
Yesterday we found out he doesn't speak French at all.
Huh?
You don't remember that?
No, I was kidding.
Oh.
Yeah. Gotcha. It's Le Monica.
Joel says, screw you, Monica.
Yeah, I got to tell you, dude. Yeah, she was that, though. She was the teacher's pet. And it was like, come on. Just chill.
Man, I just found it kind of refreshing. The kids weren't using AI for once.
Well,
they're just doing some good old-fashioned cheating.
Good old-fashioned cheating, yeah. Cheat like parents did in the
60s. Yeah.
Is it wrong that I'm so messed up about all this AI stuff that I would rather see the fraud than AI? Yeah.
To me, they're the same thing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, to me, it's the same thing.
Yeah, but at least this guy, before he got caught, got to make a little money.
Yeah. Sakura Blue.
No. ChatGPT is making all the money from the people using that.